Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams, touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. Joined once again, got the full crew with me. And we got a little fun episode today. You know, we're going to talk some more Vikings, talk a little bit more free agency. But, you know, it is JR's favorite time of year. Free agency was fun. I'm pretty sure we're done shopping now. I think we're broke. Maybe a few depth signings here and there. I mean, we got Mr. Compton in the crib today. You know, Kirk Cousins going for the homeboy Hall of Fame, getting his buddy up in here. But I think we're pretty much done with free agency. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But we are going to focus some of this episode on JR's favorite topic, which is the draft, and jump into some of the positions and players that the boys like for the Vikings as we head into draft season. So with that, guess I should introduce the guys. JR, my man, how's it going? How you doing?
Good, man. Busy times. A lot of pro days going on, trying to keep track of everything. Top 30 visits. So it's draft time. So I'm excited. Life is good.
Hey, man. And, you know, we are just glad that you're able to find time in your newfound life as a Twitter celebrity to come on and record with your boys, you know, getting retweeted by Ian Rappaport and all kinds of big things here. 10,000 followers. You know, thank you for making the time, my man.
We need to get them on the pod, man.
Yeah, no, we do. Keep working on Chipotle, man.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Talk to them about that that queso, though. Talking about the queso. And Miles, you know, really earning his title as the world's number one puppy parent. Yeah.
I'm tired. I am
exhausted. How you doing, man? Tell us about your day.
Long story short, Teddy got a puppy date all day today because neighbor's dog got out and neighbor was gone all day. So somebody had to stay home from work and watch that puppy because it was a puppy. So, yeah, you know, I'm tired.
Miles is a hero. So, yeah, world's number one puppy parent and puppy rescuer, Miles Gorham. Last but certainly not least, the man, the myth, the legend, the sexy prince. What's going on, my dude? How you doing?
What's going on, y'all? It's, you know, kind of the draft season. Getting really close. Baby girl's pro day is coming up, so I've been just kind of spending a little bit more time with him, making sure he's you know, mentally ready and all that stuff. So, you know, it's a good time.
Okay, because I was getting a little worried about you. You know, I hadn't really seen you on the Twitters as much as we had over the past few weeks, but baby bro's pro day is keeping you busy, so that's a positive thing. Nothing for us to be worried about.
Oh no, for sure.
All right. Well, with that, you know, last week we talked a little bit about some free agency, talked about some moves around the NFC North. But, you know, a lot of stuff's happened since we recorded the last time. So we're just going to go, you know, down the line, rapid fire, one time. Start with you, JR. What's your favorite, you know, NFL transaction of the last week?
Well, of course, you already know what mine is going to be. It's going to be the Jets and the Colts trade. I thought it was very interesting. The Colts traded back to the sixth overall pick while the Jets traded up to the third overall pick. I thought the Colts got the fair end of the deal. They ended up getting 2 second rounders in this upcoming draft and also a second round pick in 2019. So they obviously thought a lot of teams are trying to trade up for a quarterback. And I guess I'm sure the Jets called the Giants about the number two overall pick, but the price was probably too rich, or Dave Gettleman just didn't want to help out the other team in his area. So the Colts found a team that they had a match with, and that was the Jets. And I thought they did a fantastic job. Now they have 4 picks inside of the top 50, while the Jets will probably get a quarterback that they have similarly ranked at number 3.
Okay, so are, you know, from your perspective, because I know kind of what the math and the numbers say, but from your perspective, are you seeing this as a win-win, or you know, did one side get the better of the other in this negotiation?
I say to be determined. And that's just determined on if the Jets do hit with the quarterback pick. And I think the Colts right now, looking at it, I think the Colts got the better end of the deal, and that's just based on the trade value chart. Now, they do have to still execute those picks and pick starters with those picks. And it's a depth chart that's very slim right now, and they need start. They have a lot of weaknesses, and they can get some starters with those picks. So just not using hindsight right now, I think the Colts clearly won the trade.
All right. Miles, I know you've been following all the action in the NFL offseason here, sending out tweets, letting me know what's going on, helping me keep up to date. What's been your favorite transaction of the last week?
I'm beating a dead horse here, but I Ryan Grant to the Colts. I mean, the guy, I don't know. I've been following him just because I've been watching a lot more of Kirk Cousins film, and Ryan Grant definitely pops up on film a lot when you're watching Kirk Cousins, especially over the last season. And, you know, I was like, I think this guy's a pretty good, free agent. You know, he's 27 years old, and that the deal with the Ravens fell through, which I hope he gets paid even more from that transaction that did not end up occurring. But he ended up going to the Colts, and I think them losing Dante Moncrief is a good move for them, because I think he's a veteran wide receiver who could step in and play some significant minutes, play a significant role for the Colts. And I think, you know, if Andrew Luck's healthy, I think that only helps Ryan Grant, because he signed a 1-year deal for $5 million. So I think that was a really good move for him.
Okay. And let me find out that you're actually Ryan Grant's agent, because, you know, you've been singing the praises of Ryan Grant probably more loudly and strongly than any other person I've heard throughout this entire offseason process.
You know what's funny is, like, you say praise, like I'm talking about him like he's a number one receiver. No, I just like his game, and I think he's a solid receiver.
I'm just saying praise like you're talking about Ryan Grant, because really no one talks about Ryan Grant ever. Sure. So, you know, you might be his agent. I don't know. It's possible.
I was trying to get that money from the Ravens deal. But, you know.
And Saxy Prince, how about you, man? Favorite transaction of the last week?
I don't know if this is necessarily my favorite, but I think it's one notable that I do want to talk about. The Patriots trading for Cordero Patterson. It's very much a Bill Belichick move. I think Bill Belichick is kind of ahead of the game, in which he really covets, you know, special teams and special team studs and stuff. And we do know that Cordero Patterson is, you know, a special teams person. I mean, yeah, he's a former first round pick, but the things that he was able to do as far as, you know, kick returning and, you know, just being a gunner and stuff like that, those are the kinds of things that I think Bill Belichick, even if he's able to get a little bit out of that, you know, might be the difference between him winning an extra game or two or a playoff game or whatever the case is. And it just kind of shows further how much, like, Bill Belichick is constantly kind of thinking ahead of, you know, a lot of other teams who really don't care necessarily. I mean, we hear a lot of, like, special teamers are, you know, kind of your backups and all that stuff, rather Bill Belichick is constantly looking for guys who have this skill set that's really good and trying to get ahead of the game. So, you know, it could work out. It definitely could not work out for them, but I do think that this is going to be something that will work out for them, and it'll be good to see, you know, a former Viking actually be able to do a little bit more in a team that is, you know, already a dynasty.
Yeah, I like that. That's a different way to go, but it is also an interesting angle in terms of the importance on special teams there. So, yeah.
What was your favorite move, Jason?
Oh, I don't even really know.
You could talk about the Eagles.
No, I'm sick of talking about the Eagles, man. Like,
robbing people.
Yeah, the Eagles is going out there. Like, I mean, if we're gonna talk about the most recent one that, you know, again shows the Eagles to be seemingly a step ahead of everybody else, you know, trading apparently washed Torrey Smith, getting a player who will likely start for you back in return, and then getting Mike Wallace, who by every statistical measure has been a better player than Torrey Smith over the last couple of seasons, and paying him half as much money. I mean, yeah, that's a pretty good one, but I don't know what my favorite is. Like I said, over this last week, work's been keeping me too busy to really keep up with all this stuff. And Miles, you have really been you know, my breaking news for the NFL stuff. So it's really whatever the last one I can remember is my favorite. And it's the Eagles. It's the Eagles Mike Wallace one. So that's where we're at.
No, that means
I know what it is.
Frank Gore. Frank Gore.
I know what it is.
The Dolphins or Trevor Ryan and the Jets.
The Raiders and the Dolphins in a race to see who can add the most age to their, their roster this offseason.
Like, Russell Wilson finally got some help.
Oh man.
I'm just kidding. DJ Fluker. Oh. That's probably your favorite.
Poor Russ, man. Poor Russ. They've really taken that to the limits of you know, interior linemen aren't that important.
And so put Luke Joeckel to DJ Fluker, like, man. Like,
get that man some help.
Man.
But all right. Let's get into the Vikings a little bit. So, and I'm gonna start with the Sexy Prince on this one here. So, you know, it's been a week. I feel like everyone's had some time now to process, let things sink in, and, you know, really start to look forward and I guess envision what the new world will look like with, you know, Kirk Cousins in the fold for the long term, Sheldon in the fold for, you know, the short term, but maybe the long term if things can get worked out. And, you know, I'm seeing a lot of stuff out there. Super Bowl or bust. Vegas has, you know, put the Vikings right there, basically, you know, half a notch behind the Patriots in terms of, you know, Super Bowl odds. A lot of Super Bowl or bust talk, you know, on Vikings Twitter. Yeah, Prince, how you feeling? You know, with a bit of time to process and really kind of, you know, absorb everything that happened and all the moves the team made. Are you kind of in that same boat? Are you Super Bowl or bust? How are you feeling, just generally speaking, about the moves that the team has made and kind of the aggressive approach that we went into free agency with this year?
I don't necessarily think that we were. I mean, really, our two biggest signings were obviously Kirk Cousins and Sheldon Richardson. So I don't really feel like this offseason was really that much different than, you know, 2 years ago when Teddy Bridgewater went down and we kind of aggressively went after Sam Bradford. You know, I do understand that they're trying to, you know, not wanting to have to deal with any more quarterbacks with, you know, injury history. And they really wanted to have the, be able to say, yeah, we stabilized the quarterback position, which I in the league is it important to be able to say that. That's not always the case as far as, you know, play as we've seen. But to be able to say that, that's I think that's something that the Vikings wanted to do. I'm not necessarily Super Bowl or bust. Just because I can see the Vikings taking a giant step back, and I can also see them taking, you know, a similar step that they did this year. I don't really see them taking a huge leap forward just because, you know, you ended the season 13-3, and made it to the NFC Championship. I guess I'm hesitant to crown them just because I still feel that they have a lot of depth issues and still. When it comes to their starters, I think the Vikings on paper are one of the top teams in the league. Our starters are fantastic, from our, you know, skill position players to, you know, most people on the defense, like all the positions on the defense. And then, you know, I know we're still fixing the offensive line, but I do think that you still have some players with the Elfline and Reef, and maybe if Joe Berger comes back. So, you know, you are still trying to fill in those holes. But like I said, our starters are you know, are top tier. The thing that has concerned me since watching that Eagles game is how, you know, how much different our depth is to a team like the Eagles, who, you know, really at any position they have a lot of they have a lot of talent, you know, across the board, whether it be on the offensive line, whether it be, you know, the running back crew, whether it be you know, like our quarterbacks, we obviously saw on the defensive line. So that's where I want the Vikings to continue to get to, and I think this draft is. These next couple drafts are going to be, I think, really important. You have players who are getting older, who I think you need to start finding some of their replacements, giving Zim maybe a toy or two to continue to develop. But yeah, overall, I don't think this is Super Bowl or bust, but I do think that the margin of error has shrunk as it pertains to the draft. I think that we can't afford to have any more 2016 type drafts where, you know, we're taking a lot of, like, you know, we're taking mobos, you know. I think this is going to be a draft where you have to, you know, you really have to, as Luke Inman always says, go get your guys. So, yeah, I'm optimistic what can happen, but I'm still waiting to see what the draft kind of shapes out to be.
Okay, and I just want to just to give you an opportunity to clarify, because when you started off there, you're the kind of the language you used when you were starting off sounded a little bit more pessimistic than where it seemed like you went with things as you went along, because you kind of said that you could see the Vikings taking a huge step back, but then when you were kind of looking at the bar for comparison, you were only really comparing the Vikings against one of the other top teams in the NFC. So when you're kind of looking at things going forward, what does it mean when you say you could see them taking a huge step back? Like, could you help us understand where you're at when that thought comes up for you?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that going into 2017, we did play a third place schedule, and I think given the fact that now we're going to be playing a first place schedule, I mean, the Packers are getting Aaron Rodgers back. I think the Bears have improved. I think the Lions are still improving. I think other teams in the NFC I've seen improve in ways that, as we saw last year, there were some games where it's like it really could go either way. I think obviously solidifying the quarterback position might help in those certain areas, but you never know. If we don't really kind of solidify that wide receiver depth, a guy like Stephon Diggs who has missed games, even Adam Thielen goes down, we're really hurt in that position. Tight end position needs to continue to get upgraded. We still don't really know as far as the running back position. Dalvin Cook, he's on pace, but, he's still not – I don't think he's cool quite 100%. So, offensively, I could see us, not really really starting off slow, even if we are – you do pick it up in the middle of the season. Defensively, I think we're still pretty solid. But again, you have a major injury here or there. Linval Joseph gets hurt. A guy like Harris Smith gets hurt. That can contribute to us taking that step backwards. And that's why I kind of touched on the depth, because I think that's really going to play a key role into making me feel a lot more confident about, if a guy has to miss a game or two, then we know that guy can can kind of step in and make things, kind of cushion that blow. So I think that's why I transitioned from, a little bit of the pessimistic route to more of the, but this is why, because I think we do need to still fill some of those holes that exist.
Okay, that's fair. That makes sense. And, Miles, you generally speaking, you're the optimistic one on the pod. So, from jump, behind the scenes, we'll let you guys behind the curtain here. Miles has been yelling at Yinka and I around the clock, telling us to stop being, so negative and salty. And so Miles, he jumped straight to acceptance out the gate, because, it was one of those things that pretty much everyone saw coming. Miles was just, ready to go, start looking ahead with everything. So Miles, are you still there? Are you still optimistic? Are you part of the Super Bowl or bust kind of crew based on the moves that you've seen from the team thus far?
Well, so what can you give me your definition of Super Bowl or bust? What would happen if they don't win the Super Bowl? when I hear the word Super Bowl or bust,
is the season a huge disappointment in your view if the Vikings don't win a Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, that's every year.
But is that really true? Do you really go in thinking they're going to win the Super Bowl?
No, I know what you're saying. Like some years you have different expectations than others, like based off of the current roster construction and the moves they've made and everything like that. I totally get that. I do think there's got to be some means of I will say it's like Super Bowl or bust is probably closer to that than in years past. But I think a run in the playoffs, kind of like what we had this last year, is what I'm not saying it would satisfy anybody, but I think it would still maintain that there's that level of ability on the roster. But yes, for me, but I also think that the Super Bowl or bust aspect also means if we don't win or go to the Super Bowl, that means that we're starting over. There's going to be a new regime, and that very well could happen, but I don't see it happening after this year. It could happen, after the 2019 season or whatever, but I feel like Super Bowl or bust to me would also mean that Zim and Rick are looking to potentially lose their jobs if they don't win the Super Bowl. Now, obviously things could definitely change if they go 4-12, 5-11, 8-8. If they're not in that winning record, they're not in the playoffs, I think that is probably the bigger would be the bigger failure to me. I think they need to make the playoffs. I don't care what their first place schedule or whatever it is, the way they build this roster, they should be beating some of those good teams. And if you want to be a top tier, a top level team, you got to beat those teams. So I do think that, yeah. But to keep going, I think a few things I think the Vikings really need to do after they made some of these splash signings, they've made a couple of depth moves, and they've, you know, they got their kicker, and they signed Tom Compton today, which basically just says that Jeremiah Searles won't be back. But I'm really surprised that they really haven't done anything to address the offensive construct, especially for a guy like John DeFilippo, their, you know, the new offensive coordinator, and then your new quarterback, you know, give your new quarterback. And I know we have weapons, but like, you know, where's the, you basically get rid of his third wide receiver for pennies. It's not like, I know Jerry Sprite would have been due, you know, $4 million, but is he worth that $4 million? And, you know, for me, the way he's played last season down the stretch, especially, I mean, he probably was worth that, you know, based off the reliability that you do get from him. So what's the next move? Like, where are the weapons to add to help surround Kirk Cousins? Does that mean they have faith in Laquon Treadwell to take a step? I don't know. I don't think they should go into the season with that expectation, but I'm not behind the closed doors. I'm not making those decisions. Like Yinka touched on, I think the third tight end spot is something they need to look at heavily. They need to get somebody in here who can kind of stretch the field a little bit more, which it very well could be the draft. I mean, I think that's the only option left based off of, you know, the free agent options that are available. And then I think we know that they're going to address offensive line. And I think a guy like Joe Berger, and whether he returns or not, is kind of a big deal right now just because they haven't made any other moves. So that's the offensive side of the ball for me that kind of worries me a little bit. But I think overall your starters, besides the offensive line, just because we don't know about Joe Berger, but your offensive starters I think are set. So that's good. I think on paper it looks really good. And then defensively, I think the thing that we haven't seen them do is really go after cornerback help, because I think they're still waiting to see what Terrence Newman does. They're still waiting to see what Brian Robinson is going to do. But I think some of the depth in those areas are definitely bring up concern. And I do know that that's where the draft comes. You know, you bring some of these guys in, and you do have some young guys who can step up, like on the defensive line edge. You have, you know, Tashawn Bauer and Stephen Weatherly. So those guys, do they take the next step in their development? Do they play a lot bigger role next year, especially if a guy like B-Rob is gone? And then defensive back-wise, Terrence Newman, I think, you know, even if he does come back, that'd be great. But he really should not be seeing the even close to the amount of snaps he saw last season. He was playing way too often, especially down the stretch. They really need to, you know, solidify that nickel position. And like this is kind of a Treadwell situation where, like, I don't know what their thought is with Mackenzie Alexander and who they, you know, where they view him, but based off some of the reports we've heard about some of the players that they've looked at trying to sign in the free agency, it looks like they might be seeing Mackenzie Alexander more in a, you know, pushing him back outside. So that means that they have a huge hole that needs to be filled in that nickel position, because that's a really important position on this defense. And Terrence Newman can't hold that down all season like he did last year. And you could see down the stretch that he was getting, you know, maybe he was getting worn down or whatever it was, but he definitely didn't play as well down the stretch. And they need to find that position. And I think the draft is tough to do, especially for a nickel position. You know, if you're playing a corner on the outside, I think it might be a little bit easier to have a little bit success early, but I think it's a lot harder to play the nickel position at the next level as a rookie and, you know, expect to be, you know, be a heavy contributor. So I'm curious to see what they do there. Overall, I think the roster is in really good shape. I don't think they're completely done in free agency, but we do know that they're not going to make any more like splash moves just because they made the top two moves that they felt they needed to, you know, heading into the first wave of free agency.
Okay. All right. And last but certainly not least, QB1. You know, the Vikings got their new QB1. Swag, Kirk Cousins, rocking the J's. But I know you mentioned also that Sheldon Richardson was probably, if that had happened, and since, you know, obviously since the last pod, it's been made official, that that'd be the move that made you most excited. So now that those two big things are done, where you at, how you feeling, and where do you see the Vikings stacking up in what is sure to be a very competitive NFC? when we get into next season.
Yeah, just on the Super Bowl or bust question, I think it is a Super Bowl or bust season for the Vikings. We've seen they're going all in, and I've compared it to a Major League Baseball team at the trading deadline, trading some assets in order to get to that next step, in order for them to be a contender to get over the hump. But where the comparison is kind of different is that the Vikings have a good farm system. And what I mean by that is, yes, they gave away some assets in order to get some guys to help them get over the hump, but they still have a lot of depth pieces that they can fall back and rely on. So let's say this season doesn't go as well as planned, I still think the roster is still in good shape for the future moving forward. Having said that, you don't sign guys like Kirk Cousins and Sheldon Richardson to lose in the NFC Championship game again. You sign guys like that to get over the hump, to help you get to win that Super Bowl, giving $84 million guaranteed to a quarterback, and signing a boomer bust guy like Sheldon Richardson, who has extreme highs and lows, taking a risk on him for one season. You don't just do that to lose in the NFC Championship game. You don't hire or beg John DeFilippo to come from the Eagles for probably what's going to be a one-and-done season to lose in the NFC Championship game. So I absolutely think this is a Super Bowl or bust season for the Vikings. Not saying Zimmer or Spielman is going to get fired if they don't win the Super Bowl, but I think it's going to be highly disappointing if they don't at least contend in the NFC Championship game and eventually win it. That's just where I am with the entire situation, and you just don't make moves like that and then have the same exact expectations going into the season.
Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. So, okay. JR, you kind of touched on it. All of you in you know, kind of different ways touched on it as you started to get into the draft stuff a little bit. But I wanted to bring back up a topic that we argued about a little bit in the group message, and that there were some good arguments about on the timeline as well. Because all of you kind of made mention in one way or another that, you know, as we get into the draft, you know, we have a little bit less margin for error. We're not going to make any more big moves. We're not really going to be going out and getting a ton of, you know, guys who we expect to be, you know, big name contributors off of free agency just based on where we are and what our money looks like. So the draft is going to be really important. But that begs the question. And so, JR, I want to start with you on this one. Which side of the ball does a better job of developing players that we get from the draft?
I would say this is tough for me because it could go both ways. I would say defense, just because we've seen guys like Danielle Hunter come in and be an immediate contributor, Eric Kendricks, Anthony Barr, and even backup guys like Anthony Harris has been a contributor at some point. Xavier Rhodes has taken that next step since Zimmer and Jerry Gray have been here. Trey Waynes has progressively gotten better since he's been here. Mackenzie Alexander took some steps forward this year. So I would definitely say defense, just because it's more of a proven formula of the draft picks that they have had to this point and how they have progressed since Mike Zimmer has taken over. So I definitely would go with defense.
Okay. All right. Well, Miles, how do you feel about that? Because I feel like you go in a different direction on this one.
No, actually, hearing the way you phrased it, just overall, the way they've developed offense and defense as a whole, I think based off the draft, what we've seen is they've invested a lot heavier on defense, like especially early in the draft. So I think if you're talking about overall construct of the roster, they've invested a lot heavier on early depth and early on higher round picks on defense. So I think it definitely has to be defense just because you're getting a higher quality of players coming out of college. So I think, you know, the hit rate for those guys has been really good. And not to say that, you know, Zim and the defensive staff don't develop those guys, because of course that means they're developing them if they're, you know, all contributing and playing well. But I do overall think it's defense. I think offensively, I think what they've been asked to work with, I think they've done a really good job, because, I mean, look at some of the guys they have. You get, and I know Stephon Diggs is definitely, if he wasn't for health concerns, he probably would have gotten a lot higher in the draft, but he still was a fifth-round draft pick. Adam Thielen was an undrafted free agent from D2. Like, Nick Eason was came from Harvard undrafted. Joe Berger, you know, was pretty much a journeyman. David Morgan, sixth round pick, who's a contributor. CJ Ham is an undrafted guy who's the starting fullback on the team. You have a whole bunch of names and a whole bunch of players that are contributing, you know, on that offense that probably shouldn't. They're a lot better because of the development that the coaches have done for them. So, I think that goes a long way because the offensive staff haven't been given as much to work with in terms of high round picks, you know. But then the couple guys that they do get, for some reason, they don't really seem to develop, like guys like Laquon Treadwell, which, you know, it still is early for him. So it is still, you know, TBD on him. But, you know, I think if we start seeing them get a little bit more opportunity to get higher round picks, we might see them hit a little bit better.
See, now I'm confused, Miles, because, you know, initially you started off kind of rolling with JR's.
I know. I'm conflicted. I guess it just depends on what. Like,
you came back around to the argument you made during the week, which is the offense doesn't get the talent, and look at the players they develop, like Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs and Nick Easton and on and on and on and on. So, I mean, it kind of felt like you're on this one playing both sides of the fence. I need a definitive side of the ball that you're rolling with, offense or defense. Which one does a better job?
So I'm just going to say it is offense just because they don't get as much high-end talent to work with, so they work with less.
Boom. All right, so we're 1-1. Sexy Prince, as is often the case, you are the decider. Offense, defense, who does a better job developing players?
I will have to lean towards the defense. You know, I know that obviously, like Miles had said, I know that the Vikings have definitely put in more investment as far as defensive side of the ball, but it is important because of that investment. Like, those players needed to perform at a high level. Really, outside of, you know, defensively, Trey Waynes, who, you know, was picked at spot 11, the Vikings have gotten a lot of production out of their, you know, high round picks on the defensive side of the ball. You know, Harrison Smith has always been fantastic, but you can clearly see how much further of an elitist he's become under Mike Zimmer. You know, you saw how Xavier Rhodes in 2014, you know, if you watch the first half of the season, he kind of still is doing those same things that was kind of holding him back. But then you obviously saw the maturation of him after that, and then 2015, and really just really getting into his own, into being an elite corner. And then you get to see guys like, again, Danielle Hunter, who's very, very raw. But you're seeing him go from a, you know, a stand-up defensive end to, you know, being able to put his hand in the dirt. So you're obviously seeing not just these players, these high round picks, you know, play at a fairly high level, but you're starting to creep them into, you know, really top five in their positions. And, you know, that's important, obviously, because that's the reason why you're spending these high round picks for these guys, because you want them to be performing at a high level. Like Miles touched on, it's great to have Diggs and Thielen, you know, be, you know, top 15 at their positions as well, too, because, I mean, that they probably had a, maybe not Stephon Diggs, but even Adam Thielen had a further gap to go. But I think just because of the, you know, level of talent that you've seen come out of the defensive side of the ball, and that partially because of, you know, the coaching of Zimmer, I think, and Patterson as well, obviously. You really seen them also be able to deal with the weaknesses that some of the players that you've seen. You know, you saw some of the weaknesses with Trey Waynes, but you saw him kind of turn it on a little bit more. You saw some of the weaknesses as far as Xavier Rhodes, but he improved that down year that Anthony Barr had. Like, he was able to, Zimmer and Co. were able to turn that around. So, as far as developing talent, it's also not just about being able to get them to play at a high level right away, but also when they, you know, they might hit that roadblock sometime in their career, and able to getting them to get over that and perform at a high level. So I would have to give credit to, you know, defense as a ball.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, JR, Prince, y'all are rolling with consensus on this, because that is what the results of the poll came back with as well. Miles, I probably roll with you on this one. You're probably right. And I guess we'll see down the road,
Jason.
I guess we'll have to see down the road, because that is one of those things that I think, to the point that Miles made when he was talking about kind of the team and where he thinks they need to go as we move forward, is that I want to see Kirk Cousins get all of the support and all of the things that he needs. And I think that's also going to mean that Kirk Cousins and the offense are going to need to get some of those earlier round picks that have seemingly gone Zim's way more often than not. We'll want some more of those going towards Kirk Cousins and the O, and then we'll have to see as we move down the road, you know, how well, you know, Zim and Co can continue to do developing some of those later round players for the defense, and if we can continue to maintain that elite defensive status with a defense that isn't entirely comprised of first. I mean, the core of the defense is basically first and second round picks with, you know, Danielle Hunter kind of sprinkled in with Everson Griffin there. So that takes us to the next thing that we wanted to talk about, because I know that, you know, on the timeline, one of the big things, one of the narratives that kind of has been, you know, before Kirk Cousins signs, we're going to lose all of our players, and then Kirk Cousins signs. And that's one of the kind of underlying conversations that continues to simmer amongst folks on Vikings Twitter specifically. And it's, which player of kind of Barr, Hunter, Diggs, or Kendricks are we going to lose? And so there's all the conversation about that and people going back and forth. But I guess I'm going to switch it up for you guys just a little bit. And I want to go, I guess, more, in a more positive way to kind of talk about the same players as we move forward for the Vikings. And JR, I'll kick it off with you. Of the four players who seem to be kind of discussed most frequently as players who might leave or have to leave because we signed Kirk Cousins, which of those players is the most important player for the Vikings' long-term success? So Anthony Barr, Danielle Hunter, Stephon Diggs, and Eric Kendricks. Which one of those four would you see as being kind of the most important for our success?
Ooh, I think it's a tie for me between Danielle Hunter and Anthony Barr, because Anthony Barr, I mean, he's the center of Mike Zimmer's defense. He wears the green dot on Sundays. And we all know, I've made this comparison a million times, he's like the Alvin Kamara of Mike Zimmer's defense. He makes it so versatile. And whenever Anthony Barr is playing at an elite level, the Vikings defense just takes it another step up, because he is that ultimate chess piece that you can use in the middle of the defense at Mike or Sam linebacker. And they don't really rush him off of the edge a lot, but that's something we've seen him have success with doing. And, I mean, he's a really good blitzer, and you could just play him at so many different positions, and he allows other people in the defense to be flexible as well, because he can play so many in so many spots. So I think Anthony Barr is definitely probably 1A, and I will go Danielle Hunter as 1B. Why do I say Danielle Hunter? He's only 23 years old. You don't let young pass rushers out of the building that have his type of sack production and that have his type of upside. And we all know that edge rushers are really one of the keys to winning in the playoffs and generating pressure. And him being such, at having such a young age and having the success that he had, I think his upside is really through the roof. And him continuing to work with Andre Patterson, I think he is going to continue to get better and better each and every year. Even though his stats might have been down last year, a lot of people don't realize that his value doesn't really show up in the stat sheets. He's fantastic as a run defender, and he's able to generate a lot of pressures, even though he doesn't consistently get home and record sacks in the stat book. So I think Danielle Hunter definitely would be 1B for me.
Okay. All right. Mr. Gorham, where are you going with this one? Which player is most important?
I'm having a hard time with this one, kind of like the way JR is, just because I think I think three of the four guys are, like, vital to this team. I think –
Well, you get to pick one.
I know. JR picked two. Why can't I pick three?
That's true. I'll let JR get on his miles a little bit on this one. You know, next right. time. Sorry. Call me on it earlier.
I probably would have to say I think it's Danielle Hunter, just because I think, like, you know, what JR said is just more of the – you don't let elite pass rushers leave. You don't let them leave the building. And he's that type of player. And I think – and the way he's still only 23 years old. But I think I don't think Diggs gets enough credit in this list.
Nope. You picked your person already. You picked your person.
Fine. It's
you
it.
You picked your person. You right, got, you I'm, got Danielle Hunter.
I'm putting it on mute. Bye.
And I'm disappointed in you for not standing up for the wide receivers and going with Danielle Hunter. But it's okay. I'm hopeful that, you know, Saxy Prince, he's still here. And I know he has some takes he wanted to get off his chest. So I'm hoping that he will stand up for the wide receivers here where Miles Gorham would not. So Prince.
He goes say CJ Ham.
Of the players discussed here. Come on, man. Bring us home. Who's the most important for, you know, our long-term success as a team?
I mean, you guys, we just traded for, or not traded, we just signed Kirk Cousins to the big, like the biggest contract in NFL history. So, I mean, that being said, I think the only answer to me, it would be Stephon Diggs. Like, he is so vital to this team having success because Kirk Cousins will literally make or break this team. He will. I mean, the money that we put down for him shows that we need to put in as much investment as possible to making sure Kirk Cousins succeeds. So Stephon Diggs, in my opinion, he's vital. He's not the kind of talent that you can, you know, you can just go around trees. I mean, you can try to trade up for a first round pick. The guy might not be what you think he's going to be. I mean, we've seen that time and time again. When you get a guy like Stephon Diggs, who's obviously a top 10 talent, and, you know, sans the injury history, if he was able to consistently play at his ceiling like some of these other guys, I think he would be in the conversation of the top six, top five wide receivers in the league. I think he's clearly an accuracy eraser. I mean, he to me, bar none, he's wide receiver one. And I think he's going to be one of Kirk Cousins' best friends. And you saw that with Case Keenum as well, too. So, I mean, in my opinion, like, as much as you can't let a guy like Danielle Hunter and Anthony Barr, who is so vital to Mike Zimmer's defense, I'm definitely, you can't let Stephon Diggs even sniff free agency. Like, you need to give him as much money as he wants and then don't ever question it.
Well,
like,
chill, that's where chill I'm at. With that. But
that's where I'm at with Stephon Diggs.
Hey, Miles, we got to stop questioning Prince on how much money these players are going to get paid.
I agree is this team has really struggled with drafting and developing wide receivers. And so they finally hit on two guys in Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. You can't let one of the two leave.
Nope.
But if you pay Diggs big money, how's Thielen supposed to feel?
Hey, he's supposed to feel mad at his agent.
Hey, I can find another feeling.
Now, hey, Prince.
Hey, chill. Prince? You don't give him enough credit, man.
Oh, man. Before we derail this
top 10 wide receivers, and Prince is like, I'll move on from one of them, though. Like,
not Diggs, though.
I mean, not the one ranked, you know, higher. You got to keep that one. And you know, that is Stephon Diggs. So it took us a little while, but we got to the right answer at the end. Good work, Prince. Good work. Thanks for bringing us home. And since you did finally come through with the right answer, also notably, nobody said Kendrick. So I think that knows kind of if somebody does have to go, where everyone on this pod kind of feels about that. But since Prince got the right answer, Prince is going to lead us off on the next topic we're going to talk about here, which is, you know, it's draft season, as I said earlier on here, and we're going to start to get into some more draft stuff. Now we're going to go in. It's going to be a Viking-specific kind of offensive positional breakdown. Players that we think could be good fits for the Vikings based on some of the needs that we still see on this team. And Prince, we know if we're talking running backs, we're talking to you. What running backs that are out there based on, you know, us losing Jerick McKinnon, what running backs do you see in the draft based on where you think they'll probably go make sense for this Vikings team?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of made this list actually, you know, long before like the Latavius Murray thing was going to be a thing. So one guy I was actually like really honing in on was a guy that I liked actually last year, and I thought he was going to be a high round pick this year, but you know, because of the way the season worked out, he wasn't really the, you know, one number one back. You know, his draft stock has fallen quite a bit. So Bo Scarborough, I think he would be I thought he was going to be like a really good fit for the Vikings. He could have been like a really good Latavius Murray replacement. You know, he has the skills. I think he'd be really good in the red zone. He could be really good between the tackles and whatnot. A few other guys, Akram Waldie, Iowa. I remember just watching him for the last couple of years at Iowa. I think he would be a pretty decent Jerick McKinnon replacement. You could probably get him in the middle rounds, maybe fourth round or something, to, you know, really to continue to have enough pieces where, you know, Dalvin Cook is not having to constantly be the guy that's taking lion's share of the thing. You have Ito Smith, you know, you can get him probably late round. You get a decent pass catcher. Maybe you can get him on the edges and whatnot. A few other guys, Kellen Ballage, I think I'm saying that right. And honestly, I couldn't get, you know, Saquon Barkley because he's probably going to go top five. But, you know, if something crazy were to happen, and the Vikings could, let's say like a few quarterbacks like were to fall, whatever the case is, the Vikings are sitting at 30. Someone wants to like leap up and whatnot, and you were to trade back and you were to get a few picks, you know, some guys who might be there, you know, Hey, trade back, team trade back, you know, get your guys, right? And this is my pick, right? So I'm going to say, you know, the guys who might be there, you might have a USC Ronald Jones. He could be there. If you trade back and you want to get another back to complement Dalvin Cook, as well as, you know, my dude, Darius Geis, man. Like, you can get him second round, trade back, get some picks, as well as solidify, you know, the kind of your running back position, running back by committee. You have a really, you know, really good 1-2 punch that go in there, and Latavius Murray in the red zone. So those are just some few guys that I like, you know, some later round guys, you know, if something crazy happens, if you did want to get another back for some Dalvin Cook insurance, you definitely could do that. And those two guys would be, you know, could be high round, second round guys that you might covet.
I know we're laughing and giving Prince a hard time, but he did mention Ronald Jones, which he is an interesting prospect to me because before the combine, he had a lot of hype. A lot of people really like Ronald Jones. In terms of his production on the ground, it was very strong, but he seems limited in the passing game. I guess, JR, can you give us any more insight into kind of how he was used at USC? Is he, you know, a great pass catcher? Would he be a great third down back for us? And also, what happened at the combine and when is USC's pro day?
Yeah, so that's really the biggest question surrounding Ronald Jones. I'm a huge Rojo fan. I think he's going to be a fantastic pro, but the biggest question surrounding him is his value in the passing game. He was 75% at USC's pro day when Sam Darnold was thrown a couple of days ago. He had a couple of drops, but he was only 75%. He's dealing with a hamstring injury that he pulled running his first 40 at the combine, which he ran a 4.6 in. He actually pulled up while running that. He's going to have another pro day on April 12th. That's what they were saying on NFL Network, where he's supposed to be 100%. As far as just a little synopsis or scouting report on him, I mean, he's smooth. His nickname is actually the Texas Tesla. So he's smooth as silk, very elusive. He can hit the gas and accelerate when he sees daylight in between the tackles. So he's a guy that's very heavily dominant on the perimeter runs. So as far as outside zones and runs to the perimeter, that's really where he excels at. He is able to run between the tackles, but he does struggle from time to time. I don't want to say some vision issues. He does have a little bit of body control issues in between the tackles. What you see is he really runs into a lot of blockers from time to time. It's like he runs with his head or his eyes to the ground. I'm not sure what that issue is going on there, but, I mean, he's lightning the bottle. He's a guy that can be a home run hitter at any point in the game. His most common comparisons have been Jamal Charles, and I think that's very accurate, and that just pretty much sums up his playing style and, you know, how quickly he can go from 0 to 60 in the blink of an eye. But I'm a huge Rojo fan, but I will be paying very close attention to him at that April 12th pro day, especially in the catching drills. I really want to see how well or how naturally he catches the ball, because that will be big for his draft day status.
Okay. All right. That makes some sense. And, you know, maybe he doesn't do so well in the pro day and he falls a little bit further. And, you know, once again, one of these points that we laugh at Prince about comes to fruition a little bit later on. And then we have to hear about it for all of eternity, like on all the other points that Prince has been right on, like Case Keenum getting all his money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, Miles, I'm going to give you an opportunity now to, I guess, make amends for your not standing up for the wide receivers earlier on in the podcast. Then I need you to let me know. Wide receivers, tight end, just basically receiving weapons, because we've talked about Kirk Cousins needing him. Who should we be looking at in this draft for the Vikings that makes sense based on, you know, where you think they're going to go and the skill set they bring to the table?
Yeah, so I think wide receiver-wise, I think this draft class doesn't have too many top-heavy, you know, it's not a top-heavy draft where you have a lot of guys that are going to come in or, like, be wide receiver ones, you know, especially from day one. You don't have a lot of, you know, guys where I don't expect any of these guys to be top 15 picks, but you have a lot of good depth and a lot of guys who could come in and be wide receiver threes, wide receiver fours, and come in and contribute right away. And I think for the Vikings, I think one name for me for sure to keep an eye on is Dante Pettis, just because he hasn't been able to work out a lot he hasn't been able to work out at the combine or at pro days as pro day yet. So he's holding a pro day, I think JR told me, on April 2nd. So I think that'll be big for him. But I think he could potentially slip to, like, you know, round three. I think he's a guy to keep an eye on because I think he can do a little bit of everything. And he'd come in and be an elite punt returner and potential kick returner right away. And I think that's what, if this team doesn't bring back Marcus Sherrills, I think he'd be able to come in and take that role over without a hitch. So I'm a really big Dante Pettis fan for this team. Another guy to keep an eye on, I think we need to be looking at a little bit more. I've talked about for a while now is adding speed and adding, you know, guys who can get downfield and be a little bit more gadget guys. DJ Chark, he's not as much a gadget guy, but he's more of a, you know, he can get downfield and he can win with contested catches downfield. And I think he runs some pretty decent routes. I think he could be pretty good in this offense as a wide receiver three, wide receiver four. So he's a guy from LSU that I like in the middle rounds, maybe end of round three, early round four. He'll probably go higher than that though. He's probably more of a top 50 guy, but I think, I don't know if I'd take him that high just cause I don't think he's that good in terms of, you know, wide receiver two potential. Then you have a couple of guys, you know, at the top end that can potentially slip, guys like James Washington. I'm not really sure exactly where he's slated to go right now, just because I think we've seen people have him all over the place. I wouldn't be surprised if he went like top 20, if he went round like pick 25, you know, late round one, early round two. But if he found his way to, you know, the Vikings in round two, he'd definitely be a guy I'd look at and to want to add to this team, because he could bring that dimension to this offense right away. And then guys like Michael Gallup from Colorado State that JR really likes. I think he could be a good asset to this team as a wide receiver three. He could pretty much do everything we've been wanting from Laquon Treadwell, and I think he's got a little bit more speed to him and a little bit more twitch, quick twitch, and is really good in and out of breaks, which I really like from him. He's fun to watch on tape. And then lastly, a guy that I think could fit this offense, Deion Kane is one of those guys too. I think he could be one of those, you know, early day three picks or late day two. I don't really expect him to go day two. I don't think he's going to go that high just because I think his film's kind of a little bit all over the place. I do expect him to be more of those round four guys though. And I think he'd be a perfect fit for this offense. And he's a little bit of that do it all guy. You know, Clemson has done a really good job of having and producing NFL wide receivers. And I think he could be a guy that could, he's young too. But I think he could contribute right away in this offense and bring a little bit of that to this team. I don't even talk about some of the late round guys. You know, Darren Carrington. I like Jester Wea. Byron Pringle is kind of one of those guys that can be a punt returner and kind of do it all for you. But then if you move over to the tight ends, which I think is kind of a little bit more of a need here, I think they need to get a tight end on day two, in my opinion. I think there's basically five names that I'd be okay with them getting in terms of what they need for a guy that can stretch a field and kind of be a move tight end. There's Mark Andrews from Oklahoma. There's Dallas Goedert, which I know a lot of people know of from South Dakota. Mike Gesicki, who just blew up the combine. He had a great pro day or great combine. Hayden Hurst from South Carolina. He's a little bit on the older side, but he's got some speed. And then Ian Thomas from Indiana. I would like to see the Vikings, you know, draft at least one of those five guys. Specifically, probably one of the top four in Andrews, Goddard, Gesicki, or Hurst. I think those guys are all contributors day one for a team, especially a team like the Vikings, where, you know, they wouldn't be asked to, well, they probably, knowing Zim, they'd probably ask him to learn to block, which is fine. But those are the type of guys that they're mismatch nightmares for linebackers and safeties, and you can move them all around, line them up on the outside, slot, H-back, whatever. I think those guys can come in and stretch the field, and I think that's what this offense really needs up the middle. And I'm really sold on Dallas Goedert, but I don't think he'd be there potentially round two at the pick 30 that the Vikings have. That's where I worry, is when the run on these tight ends does go, because last year you saw, you know, guys like Evan Ingram and the Alabama kid that went to Tampa.
OJ Howard,
thank you. You saw, you know, those guys go early. But I don't expect to see these tight ends go that early this year. I expect more to be early round two or early to mid round two. So I think that's kind of where things worry me a little bit, is because I think that's where the run could start with these tight ends. And, you know, when one position goes or one player goes, that's kind of when the run starts happening. So I would love to see one of these guys be there in round two, but the Vikings might need to make a move to get one of the guys if they really like him.
All right. And I feel like they should do that too, Miles. I am with you. Bring us a tight end who's fast. That'd be nice.
Right.
And could also maybe learn a playbook. That'd be cool too. It's probably kind of important.
Is that Bucky
But
is that Shady that Bucky Hodges?
Never. You've taken from us too soon. JR, other than Billy Price, what other offensive linemen should the Vikings be looking at? Because, you know, obviously that's one of the things I feel like's been overlooked a little bit as we talk about, you know, the addition of Kirk Cousins on the team. Kirk doesn't do well with pressure. And the Vikings offensive line gave up a fair amount of it last year. So what are we going to do to fix that? And what are the players that you like to help us do so?
Yeah, it's tough. And I put up a tweet the other day that Kirk Cousins really struggles with seeing edge pressure. So tackles are really important in protecting him. And we all seen how Trent Williams was such a huge asset for him in Washington. Now, they really struggled at right tackle. They went back and forth with Morgan Moses and Ty Nsekhe. I believe that's what his name was. Both of those guys really battled injuries, and it really showed. So tackles are really important for Kirk Cousins. And disappointingly, this draft class isn't really strong at tackle. I think the only really plug-and-play options right now are Connor Williams and Mike McGlinchey. I think Mike McGlinchey is the more pro-ready of the two, but I just don't see him or a situation where he will slip to 30 just because of how highly coveted tackles are. And with this being a down draft class at that position, some of those guys are probably going to get overdrafted. And I could see a situation where McGlinchey goes in the top 15 or even the top 20. But I think McGlinchey would be a really good solution for our woes at right tackle if they do want to keep Mike Remmers at guard, which I am completely against. But it seems like they want to keep Remmers at guard. So they probably want to address tackle. Connor Williams is another option that I mentioned, but he did have some knee issues last season. But prior to that, he really did look like a promising prospect. And he still is a really good prospect, but a lot of people are really questioning his length and his lack of body mass, only weighing at 296 pounds at the combine. A lot of people are questioning if he does have the proper length to be out on an island at tackle. I think he'll be okay, but those questions will come up. Now, he's never played guard or in the interior. He's never played center either. So you're taking a bit of a risk by putting him on the inside. But if they were to draft him and they were to play him at right tackle or guard, I would be fine with it because he does have that flexibility and capability to play both. After those two guys at tackle, it's really a toss-up. You're getting into guys like Orlando Brown. We saw how he performed at the combine, and his stock has just dwindled since then. That next tier would include Tyrell Crosby and guys like Jamarcus Jones and these next guys are really getting that pre-draft hype after very good combine performances, and that's Colton Miller and Brian O'Neill. Those guys are really – they have a lot of upside, but right now they're really big projects, and I think they're going to be overdrafted because of how down this offensive tackle class is. And, I mean, Colton Miller went out and performed in the 99th percentile of almost every combine event, so – he's definitely sure to be overdrafted, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he does end up going in the first round. On the subject of guards, or switching over to guards, I think this is an absolutely loaded guard class, and I think it's a loaded center class as well. Quentin Nelson obviously is the top name, and there's no way, unless he just does something incredibly dumb, that he'll slip to the Vikings at 30. So you're talking about guys like Isaiah Wynn, Will Hernandez, and Austin Corbett, who's probably in that next tier. And, I mean, it's a toss-up right now if Wynn or Hernandez will be available at 30. Everybody knows that Isaiah Wynn is my guy. It's my draft crush this year. Shout out to him for giving me a follow on Twitter this week as well. Will Hernandez is another guy that I talked about, but there's questions about him being able to fit in a zone scheme. He's more of a man-blocking power scheme type of guard, and I mean, it'll be a bit of a risk for him to see if he can fit in a zone scheme. And if you're taking an offensive lineman in the first round or that early, you want to be sure that he can be a plug and play option or be scheme versatile. And I'm just not sure if Hernandez is that. And that brings me to Austin Corbett, who will probably go in the late second or early third round. He's gotten a lot of hype here lately. He played tackle at Nevada, but he's a guy that's probably going to have to slide inside just because he doesn't have the foot speed to consistently play tackle. But he shows that meanness and nastiness to be able to play at guard and center. And I think he's going to be a very good pro, a very reliable player at Nevada, 48 straight games, was a team captain. And just you can go on and on about him, just going more in detail about him, biology degree, very smart, very, very smart individual, and definitely was the leader of their offensive line. And then that brings me over to center, where there's some guys. We don't really need a center because obviously Pat Elflein is the future there, but there's some guys that you could potentially transfer over to guard. The most notable name obviously is Billy Price. Twitter went crazy today saying Rick Spielman talking extensively to him, and a lot of beat writers for Ohio State posting a picture of him side by side with Rick Spielman, and Billy Price even said that they had a nice long talk today. Now, he didn't confirm or deny having the meeting with the Vikings, but I'm sure they probably will meet with him or have a pre-draft meeting with him set up at some point. The next prospect on the center rankings will probably be James Daniel for Iowa, who's gotten a lot of steam here lately. And I just don't think he'll be able to transfer over to guard. Yes, he has played it in his days at Iowa, but I just think his body frame is best suited at center because he is very athletic, but he just doesn't have the girth to consistently hold up at guard. He's more of your slender, athletic build type of offensive lineman. So I think he's best served as being at center. And that brings me to Frank Ragnow, who is probably the next guy on the list.
There we go.
Minnesota native. I think he's a very good player. Reminds me a lot of Brandon Linder, the center from Jacksonville. I think he would be able to play center or guard. Now, he plays a bit high. I mean, he's all of 6'5", 300-plus pounds. He does have very high pad level, but, I mean, he's just extremely nasty. And he was the heartbeat of that Arkansas offensive lineman. Didn't give up an entire sack, or he didn't give up a sack in his entire Arkansas career, which is very impressive. Pro Football Focus absolutely loves him. He's their number one ranked center, and he has the stats and the data to back it up. I mean, the film is very impressive, and he's a guy I think you can get in the third round and definitely be a plug-and-play option. So overall, the interior offensive line class is very strong, but the tackle class is very down. But I think the Vikings can definitely find a plug-and-play option at center or guard, whichever they choose to do in that second or third round, or even at 30 if they do so choose to do that.
And you mentioned two players that I actually asked you about earlier in the week. So you mentioned Ragnow and Corbett, and it brought up a point. I think Miles was the one who brought up the point in the group message in terms of, you know, Corbett being someone who has the tackle experience that you'd be moving inside. So he potentially could give you the, you know, tackle guard flexibility. And then a player like Ragnow, who is a center now, but would potentially be giving you that kind of flexibility across your interior line. For you, looking at the construction of the Vikings, and then I guess also what's available out there, which, I guess, in terms of positional flexibility, which one is more important to you? Would you want someone who can play across the interior, or someone who potentially could flex out to tackle in a pinch if necessary?
Oh, tackle, definitely. I think tackles, I think reliable tackles are so hard to find. It's very easy. Well, I won't say easy. It's easier to find interior guys in those mid rounds. But if you can get a guy that can be a legit tackle, I think that is so valuable. And that's why I value guys like a Connor Williams and a Mike McGlinchey over those interior guys, because it's very hard to find reliable tackles. And we all saw in 2016 how having unreliable tackles can completely derail a season.
All right. Well, that is a lot. A lot of great information from you guys there. Thank you for bringing all of that for myself, because, you know, I get to learn and listen with y'all, but also for the listeners here. And I guess one last question for you guys. It's going to be a rapid fire. This week's this or that. JR, we're starting with you, because this was your question, and it's a good one. So you get to go first on it here. So you're building a team. You get to pick one player on offense, one player on defense. Who are you picking and why?
So I went back and forth with this, and I'm going to stay with my two guys, and I'm going to go on offense. I'm going to go with Carson Wentz, even though he still had the knee injury. I'm a big Carson Wentz believer. I love his career. I love his career trajectory. I love the improvement that he's shown to this point. And, I mean, I'm just a big fan of Carson Wentz, and I think he's going to be a very good player even after the knee injury. Now, on defense, I'm going to go with Joey Bosa. That's my guy. I think he's going to be a fantastic pass rusher. He has the production at this point in his career, still very young. I think he's a franchise cornerstone for the Chargers moving forward, and I think he's only going to get better at this point.
Okay, JR going with the grit. Like it, like it, like it. Miles, who are you going with here? Offense, defense?
I'm struggling with this one on offense just because it probably would be Carson Wentz for me too. But I think a guy like Russell Wilson's not far behind. And then just because of age, I think that's probably the biggest reason for me. But defensively, this one's a tough one. They're both tough just because there's so many, you know, elite talented players in the league. But it might be Aaron Donald for me. I think he'd be the guy for me that I'd want to build my defense around and, you know, construct. So I'm going to go Carson Wentz and Aaron Donald.
Okay. I can't really, I mean, I'll argue a little bit, but, you know, not too much. Can't really. I mean, you pick some good players there. Saxy Prince, what about you, man? Where are you going? Saquon Barkley and who else?
I think my principles don't allow me to pick a quarterback in this situation, so I'm actually gonna go. I'm actually gonna go with Tyron Smith, left tackle. I love his game. I love watching him just maul people. Defensively, I probably go Michael Bennett. I know that he would bring leadership to the locker room really quick. Not afraid to speak his mind. And you know he's going to give you high-level play as well each and every game. So, yeah, those are my two guys.
Wow. I feel like Ginka picked his picks to balance out JR's picks or something.
Right. I like Michael Bennett, but Michael Bennett?
Yeah. I'm surprised nobody said Ramsey.
I thought about Ramsey, and I thought about Lattimore for a hot second, too.
Y'all know for me, I'm definitely going quarterback, and I'm going Russell Wilson. And then, in defense, like Miles said, it's tough. There's so many good defensive players, but it would be one of the top corners I think I'd end up taking. So, I mean, flip a coin, take your pick, Ramsey, any of those guys, the elite lockdown, take away your best receiver type of corner. So, yeah, we'll just go with Jalen just because his quotes are the best.
Sassy Jalen is the best Jalen.
Sassy Jalen really is the best Jalen. There's no better Jalen than Sassy Jalen. Well, that's it. That's the show. We covered a lot, gentlemen. Thank you for all of that. Before we get out of here, I know y'all have been busy, but we are in a draft season, so I have to ask, Anybody got anything they need to plug? JR, you got anything upcoming?
Nah, just working on the database, getting it together. April 9th is the release date. I'm gonna post it on my Twitter page, and hopefully everybody doesn't give me too hard of a time on my misses.
Oh, you know we definitely will. You know we definitely will. And we'll forget everyone that you hit on. But Miles, what you working on, man? What you got coming up for us here?
Yeah, I'm finalizing my rankings. It's hard because doing a top 10 ranking for some positions isn't really possible. So I might cut that depending on the position, but working on my top 10 ranking.
Nice, nice, nice. And Saxy Prince, what you got going on, man?
Yeah, I think I might, given the fact that Minnesota's pro day is coming up pretty soon, I think I might do just like a, you know, who should, for everyone who's not the Gopher fans and stuff, you know, just who you should, you know, maybe pay attention to. Because, you know, you got to know who's, you know, who's in your own state sometimes. So I might give a little preview of that. Some guys that me and JR have kind of talked as well, too. You know, Steven Richardson. There's also, you know, John Celestine. And, you know, a few other cats that, you know, you might need to look out because Rick really hates missing out on talent in his own, you know, his own backyard. So I think it'd be important to, you know, kind of outline a few of those guys.
Awesome. 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 We're looking forward to all of that. Gentlemen and listeners, thank you for sticking with us here for another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I'm your host, Jason Brown, here as always with JR, Miles, and the Saxy Prince. And yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.